Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Busy week in sports, so a busy week in podcasts. Hope you all heard the college football SEC preview with Brad Edwards, our analytics guru. That posted Wednesday, so I encourage everyone to go check it out, listen, and kind of get brought up to speed as the SEC joins a few other teams in college football and gets going this coming weekend. Coming up on this podcast, we will have a UFC 253 preview. Matt and Lou are back for more. That's going to be after we do the NFL, like we always do on Thursdays with Mr. Executive Director John Murray, and we'll do a little baby bankroll bonanza. I'm hot, but I want to apologize to those and just thank everyone for, you know, trucking through. But my audio was off a little bit on one of the podcasts last week. So hopefully we've resolved that and we can push forward, moving forward. So I appreciate everyone's flexibility. I know everyone's a lot more understanding the last handful of months consuming, just any platform, whether it be TV and the social distancing and the audio and the Skyping and Zooming and all that stuff. So we try to make it high quality for everyone. So I appreciate everyone's flexibility and understanding on that front. So again, UFC at the end, Brad Edwards was yesterday, and let's get to Mr. Executive Director. But before we get into today's episode, I want to remind everyone to go check out another ESPN podcast that will help you with your fantasy football teams. Make sure you're staying up to date on all your fantasy football news with ESPN fantasy experts, Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Mike Clay, and Daniel Dopp on the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You'll get daily strategy, previews, and injury reports to ensure you have all the information you need for your fantasy football team. Be sure to download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football and Behind the Bets on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
All right, 2 weeks in the books in the NFL. We have some intriguing developments, but one fun development, I should say, here in Las Vegas as we welcome in Mr. Executive Director is our Las Vegas Raiders are 2-0 off the big Monday night win.
You're a Las Vegas Raiders. Aren't you a big Raiders fan?
I am, it's our city.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good win, and it was a game where we saw a very sharp player took 5.5 early on the day Monday, and then we had one of our house players came in and took +4 for about 50,000 shortly after that bet came in. So I believe we actually closed that game at 3.5. We still needed the Raiders because we had so much money line parlay action from the weekend going to New Orleans, because every favorite won on Sunday. So you can imagine the kind of money line parlay liability we were looking at on Monday night. And then at halftime, game was tied. Second half line was Saints -3. We had one house player bet 20,000 on that. We had another one bet 40,000 on the Saints -3. So a lot of action on New Orleans and Oakland and Las Vegas in that game Monday night.
So that's what you mentioned, the parlays connected. I want to talk about how ugly was Sunday, because it's so funny. We at the end of Sunday morning show, we sometimes have a few minutes and a few seconds, I should say. And I looked at the guys, I go, I have a feeling all these teasers are going to hit. I think this could be an ugly Sunday for the books. And then next week, I'll get it all back. But I think today, It just had all the makings of like a teasers and like all of them. I just was like, I don't see any of them losing. Now I got Harry with the Chiefs. But how bad was Sunday?
It was very bad. I think we maybe only had one Sunday last year that was worse than what we dealt with this past Sunday. Lost quite a bit. All money line parlays, teasers, every favorite wins. You cannot win as a sports book if every favorite wins. The funny thing is, if we could have just got the Chargers to beat Kansas City, we would have had a great day because it would have knocked out all those money line parlays I'm talking about.
Right.
We actually would have won a lot. Just that one game, I think that they probably win the game if Justin Herbert runs for that first down instead of trying to throw the ball into double coverage. I think that they probably would have won the game, but I don't want to knock him. I thought under the circumstances, I thought he played very well. Being told right before kickoff, hey, you're going in there against the Super Bowl champions, I thought he played great under the circumstances, but that play probably cost the Chargers the game. That play, along with some what I thought were some questionable decisions to kick and punt.
You know, it's funny. I would love to talk to a football mind because I would imagine game planning for Herbert is very different than Taylor. So I wondered if the Chiefs just were, like, thrown off as well as the Herbert was thrown off. Like, I agree with you. He played great. But I wonder what, like, that game, how it plays out. I'm just so fascinated by, you know, the flat spots and just the game, just the managing of a game and the game plan when you have all the tendencies of one guy and you've never seen the other guy play. But you're right. He was made a couple of questionable calls. Anthony Lynn's decision to punt in overtime was obviously something that people will criticize. I had a big position on the Chiefs and a teaser at 2.5. So I was praying to God he punted.
Which
he did. So
yeah, and a tough spot for Kansas City. Let's not forget this: the emotional Thursday night game. They beat Houston to kick off the NFL season. You can't tell me they weren't looking ahead a little bit to this Monday night at Baltimore, the two best teams in the NFL playing this Monday. Kind of a flat spot there, but they did manage to get the win thanks to some heroics from Patrick Mahomes and some questionable Anthony Lynn decisions. That's all I'll say on that.
Yeah, the 3rd and 20 scrambled for Mahomes was epic, but he also got hosed by a couple holding calls too that were a little suspect. But anyways, so obviously we have some teams 2-0 that are surprises, teams that are 0-2 that are surprises. Cowboys with the miracle, a lot to digest. Let's turn the page to this week, and I made a vow to myself this summer, and I will not break it, John Murray. I told myself, don't you ever complain again about any bad Thursday night matchup, such as Miami and Jacksonville. And I will not. I will celebrate that we have football because not too long ago, I was adjusting my sleep schedule for Russian ping pong. And because of that, I will not complain about Miami-Jacksonville. And I might have to whisper it, Murray, I kind of like the Jags.
You know, all my notes on this game are making fun of how bad it is. So I guess I'll blow through that. not a lot to report here. It's about a 3.5-1 ticket count on Jacksonville. Jacksonville has been a lot feistier than we thought they would be. You know, can we say that? I mean, I thought the Colts kind of gave away that game week one, but Jacksonville did take it from them. And then they covered against Tennessee last week. Sharp action, if you're into that sort of thing. Respected player just this morning bet that the first score of this game would be a touchdown. He laid -160 on that. He also bet Gardner Minshew under 264.5 passing yards. Great facial hair battle tonight between these two quarterbacks, Minshew and Fitzpatrick. And it's looking like the books will need the Miami Dolphins here.
It's funny you mentioned the facial hair because do we think we're like the masses are dismissing Gardner Minshew because of the jorts and mustache? Like, why is he not considered like a good young quarterback, right? I mean,
well, he's not in a great situation. I agree with you. I mean, sometimes I think young quarterbacks are unfairly judged when they're in a really bad situation. Gardner Minshew is in a terrible situation, and he's still making plays happen. So I think I don't know if it's because of the jorts. I don't know if I agree with that, but it does seem like maybe because he's a little goofy off the field, people aren't taking him seriously enough. I think he might be onto something there.
Well, I mean, look, he played for Leach. Leach prepared him. Leach sings his praises. So, and look, not every quarterback can play for Leach, but like, clearly, like, I would say it was like an AP class in quarterbacking, you know, playing under Leach. And he's obviously surpassed expectations in a lot of ways from last year and this year. And I thought he's let me put it this way. In that division, Jags 22-1, is it that crazy that they can win the South?
I don't think it's crazy. I still personally like Indianapolis. I know they had a terrible loss to the Jags. But I still believe in Frank Reich, and I think he'll get them going in the right direction. But no, it's not crazy because there's no great team in that division. And when there's no great team like a Baltimore or a Kansas City, really anything can happen.
That's exactly my point because Houston's obviously played the two best teams in the NFL, so we're not sure about them. But yes. I just think it's a little extreme to write this guy off and this team off because they're pretty good, 2-0 against the spread. So we'll see what they have moving forward. But that's plenty of Jacksonville-Miami talk. My favorite play this weekend is New England. I just think it's we're going to learn a lot more about the Raiders. Like, nice win, but A, no Michael Thomas. B, kind of Drew Brees looked every bit of his age. And I think we'll know a lot more against a coach like Belichick.
Well, it's such a tough spot for the Raiders. They went to the East Coast week one. They come back to Vegas for the Monday night game. Now they go back to the East Coast for a 10 a.m. Vegas time kickoff. And New England's coming off a loss. New England, this is about as bad of a situational spot as you're going to find in the NFL. We saw a sharp group go under 48.5 in this game. This total has come down. I agree with you on the Patriots. And we can talk about it later in the show because, we have to give that pick to Mr. Brent Musburger. We were neck and neck on either New England or another game that we'll talk about later. We gave him that other game only because we don't like to give him the Raiders games. He doesn't really like to use the Raiders games in the Super Contest because he is their play-by-play radio announcer. So we gave him a different pick, but we really like the Patriots every bit as much as that other pick because it's such a bad spot for Las Vegas here.
Yeah, that's going to be my baby bankroll bonanza pick. I'm just giving it away early.
There's no point in any of these guys aren't going to listen to the rest of the show. So I don't know why you did that. See how I teased that we had another play? I didn't mention it. Because I want people to keep listening.
It's a deep tease, too. It's good. It's a deep tease, as we like to say.
Excellent.
So, look, I think it's also, not the greatest spot for the Pats, too. I mean, look, that was a hugely emotional game. Do we know if James White's going to play? It's just not an ideal spot. And sometimes, the crowd can, pick you up a little bit. So, not having a crowd is a little bit of a kind of a strike against New England. But I just trust Belichick. He's a machine. And I got to look it up. I think he's 51-26 ATS off a loss.
Wow. And what a performance from Cam Newton on Sunday night. I know Seattle not on the level that they have been recently defensively, but still, I don't want to take anything away from Cam Newton. He was awesome in that game.
Yeah, because he is awesome when healthy. And he's healthy and he looks great. Sure. I think the Patriots are they're just going to get a little bit better, right? They'll get more refined with their wide receiver play, and they're just going to, learn, kind of each other's and develop chemistry. So I like that. I'm very curious to see how the Raiders' offense goes against the New England defense if, in fact, Belichick takes out Waller and does the, makes you play left-handed thing that Michael Lombardi always likes to say. So I'm curious to see what they do. And I think Gruden's done a wonderful job. He changed Carr's dropbacks to three steps during the game, and that made all the difference for the Raiders moving forward on Monday night. So I'm just curious. It's like a meeting of the minds, if you will, with Belichick and John Gruden. Next game's intriguing because, look, you can only play the teams on your schedule. So the Bills are 2-0, but they beat the Jets at home and they won at Miami, although they did do it without two linebackers who were hurt. So it was a nice win, all things considered. But they have the hardest schedule remaining, according to ESPN's FPI analytics team. So I don't know if the Rams quite classify at Orchard Park, but you have a short number here, and the Rams are 2-0 out of the gates.
Yeah, and I think the betting on this game is pretty interesting. Right now, the Rams, a 2.5-point dog, getting about 3-1 of the tickets here. You know about the 12-day line we put out every week for the following week's games. When we first put this number up, the previous week, we put up Buffalo -3. We had a sharp group lay 3. Then we moved it to -320, and another group we respect laid 320 on that 12-day number. Now you can lay 2.5, and the public has all taken the dog, or most of the public has taken the dog here, the Rams. So interesting betting there. I agree with what you said about Buffalo's easy early schedule, but I do like Josh Allen, and I like the Bills. And we saw sharp guys laying a higher number on this game and the public taking the dog. So process that information how you want to.
Were those the same guys taking the Eagles last Sunday against the Rams?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, look, these guys can't rewrite about every game. Usually when they play a number and it ends up being better, usually the number comes back to them. Like that Eagles game, I know they got smoked, but that number did drift back up. We closed 2 here on the Eagles. So usually the number will come back to where they close to where they were betting it at. They're usually right about that. So, good point. There's another one like that we can get into here later, a little bit further down the board. There's one where they took a number that you can actually get a better number on this week.
You don't even need me anymore, Murray. You're teasing. You're like mid-teasing. You got it all over.
No. No, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing, if we're being honest. But go ahead.
All right. So the next game, we've seen some significant line movement. It's come down quite a bit. So Pittsburgh lane 4 right now to Houston. But this number was higher earlier in the week.
Yeah, it was more like 6 Pittsburgh. You touched on it already. We don't really know what the Texans are. I know they're 0-2 and they've had 2 bad losses, but they played the 2 teams that are head and shoulders above the rest of the NFL right now. Kansas City and Baltimore are clearly the 2 best teams in the league. So Houston, the schedule makers haven't done them any favors. I mean, we'll find out a lot more about the Texans this week. And you're right, this number's come down quite a bit. I don't think much of Bill O'Brien. That's about all I have to say on that.
I'm not sure about the Texans, because as much as we criticize Bill O'Brien, and rightfully so at times, and they lose Hopkins, like, Deshaun Watson's still really good, and they've won this division 4 out of the 5 years, and the only year they did not was when he was hurt. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I think Bill O'Brien is so criticized that I actually think he's, like, it's exaggerated.
That he's underrated? Is that what you're saying?
Well, underrated is the kind of wrong connotation, and I guess we're splitting hairs here, but it's like
– You're a Bill O'Brien apologist.
It's such an overcompensate. It's just such an exaggerated, like he's like the worst coach ever. I'm like, well, he's actually done okay. I don't know.
He shouldn't be the GM too. I know what you're saying, but he really shouldn't be the GM too. Right. But we'll see there. Somebody asked me why is this line coming down? And I was like, this is the kind of analysis you get with me. I have no idea. I've been surprised. I've been surprised to see this number come down. We didn't really have much debate about when we made it on Sunday night, Steelers 6. I'm not sure why this number's coming down. So that's why I get invited on all these shows. It's for that kind of crackerjack analysis right there.
Well, I have some really intense analysis. We had Stu Gotts from the Dan Le Batard show with Stu Gotts make his daily wager debut on Tuesday, and we had some fun. And then this was the one pick he had. He was like, I like the Steelers minus the 4. So,
Okay. That's better analysis than I gave you.
Play of the week.
I gave you nothing.
Yeah. All right. Next game's interesting because the Niners took care of business like I thought they would, but doesn't look like Jimmy G is going to play. It doesn't look like a lot of guys are going to play for the Niners, including Bosa. Maybe we're not sure about Kittle yet and some other guys banged up. But they're the Niners, and they reload. And the Giants are without Barkley. I talked to Ed Sammons, your colleague, earlier in the week. He said Barkley's worth about a half point to the point spread, which is actually kind of significant for a non-quarterback, all things considered, even though, like, it's only a half point for a guy that's, you know, among the top picks in fantasy. It's just the way the cookie crumbles in the NFL point spread world. But I feel like the Giants are going to be like a good cover this year, and they showed it last week with the comeback. I'm just not ready to grab the 3.5 or 4 with the Niners.
Yeah, we got Niners 4 here. Not a ton of action on this game. I read that the Niners were complaining about the field conditions last week. They played at the Jets, obviously, same stadium. I don't know if that might be in their head a little bit this week, going on the road against the Giants. A lot of guys out for the Niners, so just keep an eye on the injury report here for sure. But so far, not a whole lot of action on this game either way.
Yeah, nothing really more to go on there. Let's keep it moving. Your Minnesota Vikings, who are 0-2 and just look horrendous.
Struggling.
I don't think they're going to turn it around. I mean, Tennessee has had a couple nail biters here. They are -2.5 on the road. I think the Titans might be good. I think that they were my pick to win that division beginning of the year. I think they might be good, man.
Well, they should have won on Monday night, 2 Monday nights ago, a lot easier than they did against the Denver Broncos. Gostkowski with all those missed kicks, kind of a misleading final score. The Titans will be a very popular public side this week, that cheap road favorite against an 0-2 team, the Minnesota Vikings. We're already setting up to where it looks like the Vikings are going to be one of our bigger needs of the morning.
You might get there. At some point, Tennessee is going to have a flat effort, whether it's this week or maybe next week or the week out. At some point, Tennessee just can't keep playing these nail biters and covering, or not covering, but escaping.
Sure.
Oh, the next game. This has backdoor cover written all over it. Washington getting a full 7 now at Cleveland.
Yeah, and this is a game that I mentioned earlier, I referenced earlier. This number was 5.5 on the 12-day line, and we had a group take that 5.5 on the football team, and now they can get 7. So we'll see if people come in and bet Washington in this spot, sharper players. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. Cleveland coming off of a win over the Bengals. Washington didn't look good against Arizona, but that was a tough spot on the road against a Cardinals team that probably will prove to be better than people realize. So keep an eye on Washington plus the 7. They were taking 5.5 last week. I wouldn't be surprised to see the number come down a little bit from 7.
Well, that surprised me. They took the plus 5.5 because I thought Washington was going to get waxed in Arizona. Like I could have projected like that line going up a little bit after the Thursday night win. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's interesting because I thought Arizona, like that was my eliminator pick in all my pools, Arizona. So I had, I had a pretty, I think they're good. I don't think it was a fluke win in San Francisco. I think
you're right.
Team. Yeah.
They are. Their offense looks really well coached. I agree with you.
Yeah, man. I think he's in the running for coach of the year already. And I think Murray's an outlier for MVP. I thought his odds were kind of low to begin with at the beginning of the year. And I was like shocked. But then I was like, oh, they're 2-0 and he looks great. That's why the odds were so low. Smart by the odds makers, not me. I don't know about this line movement, my friend. I don't know about this line. It feels a little high. I think Philly kind of stinks.
And it's come down a little bit. It came down a little bit from 5 yesterday to 4.5 now. Philadelphia minus 4.5. Joe Burrow looks pretty good through 2 games for a guy who's not exactly in a great position with the Bengals. I don't know what to make of Carson Wentz. You know, we saw a lot of sharp guys play Philadelphia last week. Like we mentioned, we saw that number move up. And then they just got, you know, they got crushed by the Rams. We're never really in that game. So it's hard to know what to make of the Eagles right now.
Yeah, I think they're just not very good now. They could still make the playoffs in that not very good division, but it is kind of interesting to see. I think you and I touched on it even a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, is this Philly team misses Frank Reich more than people want to give it realize, you know.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. We've talked about that on this show for a couple of years now, and I think there's a lot of validity to that.
Next game is super fascinating because we all play amateur psychologists on certain teams in certain situations, and God, I don't know what to make of Atlanta's collapse. And then we're not sure about Julio Jones's availability, Dan Quinn's eternal hot seat. I just don't know how to handicap the mindset of this Falcons team. Now that's in a much tougher division with Tom Brady going to Tampa. And now they're 0-2. Yeah. And the Bears are a shaky 2-0, but they're still 2-0.
People seem very confident in Atlanta this week. Atlanta, maybe our most popular side in the 10 a.m. games, taking a lot of bets on the Falcons, a lot of money on the Falcons. Right now we've got Atlanta -3, -120. I'm not in a rush to back Dan Quinn. I'm just going to say that. I don't think much of Dan Quinn, put it mildly. The Bears probably aren't as good as their record. I mean, they should have lost to Detroit week one. But the bottom line is that they took care of business in both games, and they are 2-0, so we got to give them some credit for that. Interesting game. It looks like we're going to need the Bears fairly big here. A long way to go, obviously, between now and Sunday. But right now, we got more tickets on Atlanta than any other team at the 10 a.m. games.
Wow. I guess it makes sense. The Bears are due to be the Bears again, but I don't know if Atlanta's the team to do it. Okay, let's turn the page. Popular pick, I would imagine, this week with Survivor Pools would be the Colts at home. Double-digit, the first double-digit point spread of the young season, Mr. Murray, with the mighty Jets in town.
The Colts have to be looking back at that Jacksonville loss. Like, what the hell happened? We could be 3-0 after Sunday. All they got to do is get through Adam Gase and the New York Jets. We've got them as a 12-point favorite right now. Everybody's betting the Colts. I'd expect that to carry into the weekend. I don't know how you bet on the Jets right now. I mean, the 49ers last week, half their team was out of that game, and they still won handily against the Jets on the road. Tough to back the Jets here, even at this big number. They're just a complete mess right now.
I tried to tell the world that
you did
the Niners were going to go in there and whip some tail. And, you know, now granted my audio was in and out, so I apologize for people. But
they didn't hear you, but you did try. Yeah. You tried to tell them.
Now, this is different. Like, I expect the Colts to be professional, and I expect them to take care of business. But, like, last week was the spot to back the Colts. And you had some reverse line movement on that game last week.
Yeah, we talked about that. Where it was Colts against the Vikings. Where you and I talked about it. I know that. It might have been after we did the show. Well, nobody could have heard it anyway because of the audio. But we had, the Colts were -2.5. And they went to 3, they went to 3:20, they went to 3.5 on Sunday morning, and that was even though over 4-1 of the tickets were on the Vikings. So I kind of sent out the bat signal to a few friends of ours, including yourself, and just said, the Colts are probably going to get there today.
Yeah, and they did with ease over the Vikings. So I can't lay double digits in this situation. If I were going to pick the game, that would be the only side I would take. It's probably going to be my eliminator pick too. I think the Jets are putrid.
Now, well, it's going to be a very popular eliminator pick because you're never going to get a better chance than this to go with the Colts. I can't imagine that you'd get a better chance than this. So the Colts are going to be such a popular eliminator pick this week.
Now the next game is just jumped out at me as like a teaser potential, but I think it's kind of a flat spot for the Chargers. They're laying 6.5 here with Carolina. No Christian McCaffrey, who Ed said was about 1.5 to the point spread. Just, I mean, that's about as big as you can get for a non-quarterback. So, but mm-hmm. I think it's like a kind of a, I don't want to say flat spot, but it's just not the best situational spot. This does have a Chargers like 3-point win written all over it though.
Yeah, and you touched on it earlier, but it's a really good point. Now Carolina's got a week to prepare for Herbert, whereas Kansas City, maybe they were preparing for Tyrod Taylor last week. So we'll get a really good look at him this week against the Panthers. It does seem like a lot of points, but the Chargers are a very talented team, and they're just one or two plays away from being 2-0. So I do think that the Chargers are definitely better with Herbert in there than Taylor. There's no question in my mind about that. And I don't know why. I saw Anthony Lynn saying that Taylor was still the starting quarterback when he's healthy, but I really have a hard time buying that. I think he just said that because he knew that Taylor couldn't play this week anyway.
Yeah, I think he's trying to, you know, protect himself from a lawsuit given what happened with Taylor's injury, according to Schefter's report. All right, so this next game scares me, and it scares me so much that I'm not going to play it at all, not even in a teaser, because it looks too enticing, and that's Arizona laying the 5.5 to a Detroit team that they should just be able to carve up on offense. It's a high total for a reason, 55.5 as well.
It's not scaring anybody else, I'll tell you that much. This is our most lopsided ticket count of the week. It's almost 10-1 right now on the Arizona Cardinals, and despite that, we've seen this number come down from 6.5 to 5.5. So do with that information what you want. Cardinals, a very popular play. I think when the games kick off on Sunday afternoon, our biggest liability will be Tampa Bay against Denver because of the road dog element there. But the Cardinals are going to be a big liability for the books this week.
You know, I've been doing this a long time, and mm-hmm. I really felt it last week when I said we're going to bury the books, and next week they're going to get us all back. And I am basically passing on every game this week. I've been down this road too many times.
No, that's not you though. You're Doug. You don't pass on every game. What's the fun in that? Now nobody's going to listen to the bonanza portion. I can't pick a winner. You're giving away your plays at the start of the show. Why would anybody keep listening? I don't know.
I'll tell you why. Because laying off a game is like getting plus 110.
True.
You're saving point, it. Man. Therefore, you're getting one plus 110. I mean, that's really what
advice.
It's about. I should
lay off every game.
I just think it's going to be, you know, look at the Dolphins backdoor cover last week. We're going to have a few of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you said last week, a lot of the favorites won. There was actually 7 favorites that won but did not cover. That is tied for the most ever. If the Saints had won by like 3 last week, you would have had 8 and a record of teams that the favorites that won but did not cover. And the only teams that did not cover were the Rams, but they were like 1-point favorites. So you almost like throw that game out. And then the Saints were obviously the one time that the favorite did not win the game.
Well, you throw out something like the Rams game. I know the Rams won as a dog, but the Eagles weren't a team that was thrown into a lot of money line parlays. That's not the kind of game that people are money line parlaying. They're doing it with games like the Cardinals, games like the Bucks. Stuff like that, 6-point favorite, near touchdown favorite or higher, that's where you're going to get all your moneyline parlays.
Right. So it's just we've been down this road a million times. Like, it's going to rear its ugly head, right? And
I hope so.
The situations are really, like, not great. Like, I think Arizona, of all these teams, like, I know the reverse line. I think they get the win. But I'm worried about the Chargers. I know it has all the making just like an ugly win by Carolina. Like, what happened to the Chargers a week ago? They were playing the Chiefs, you know? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting. 10-1 ticket count, and you got some reverse line movement a little bit through the number of six. Now, you mentioned that you're going to probably need Tampa Bay. We know how Brady struggles in the Mile High City over the years.
Yeah.
And Denver has looked good. I like the Broncos here plus the points.
Well, yeah, we'll need Denver pretty big, pretty lopsided ticket count already. Not as lopsided as Detroit, Arizona, but there's a lot of money on the Bucks. There's going to be a lot of money line parlay money going to the Bucks. They're a six-point favorite. Denver's got a lot of guys out. A lot of guys out. I know Locke is out. Jeff Driscoll's in at quarterback. A lot of guys on that Denver injury report, so I keep an eye on that. I would argue that Tampa Bay's week one loss at New Orleans doesn't look like as good of a loss after we saw New Orleans struggle with the Raiders on Monday night. So I don't know how good the Buccaneers really are, but the public seems happy to lay the points with them here.
Yeah, you're right. Denver is nicked up, and the quarterback change can't be a good thing. It's not an awful thing. I think it's a little bit of a lateral move, but I get it. I mean, obviously, the one guy was starting for a reason. But, yeah, I don't know. I think Denver's going to bring it that game. We'll see. This one's been a little wonky in terms of the movement. Seattle hosting Denver. Yeah. Dallas. Cowboys, first place, 1-1, right? Neil, solid year so far.
The Cowboys look really good.
Just a miracle. Hey, do you want to talk about the decision to go for two at all? Is this something we should expand on, and since we're such coaching experts throughout the years on the pod?
Which one are we talking about? The one that
McCarthy.
McCarthy. I thought he made the right decision.
I know. Many people understand that. Yeah, not many.
I saw people knocking the play call, which I'm not here to talk about, but I think he made the right decision to go for the two there. I don't have a problem with that at all. I think the math, it's proven that the math shows that you should go for two in that scenario. Although right. I'm not here to grandstand and defend Mike McCarthy. You know, don't put me up on that soapbox, but I do think that was the right decision. That one time he made the right decision. Yes.
Right, so when you're down 15, the conventional old-school thinking was, hey, get it to 8, stay in the game, continue to momentum, pressure, and that's just really not. Like, if you need a two-point conversion at some point. Now, if it's early fourth, like, they may get a field goal, so then you kick the field. You know, it depends where you are, how late it is. But if you're late enough that Atlanta cannot score for you to stay in the game, therefore – it made more sense because you know it's getting information earlier than later. Why prolong it if you're but you make an assumption that the outcome of the 2-point conversion is going to be the same as it is then than it is if you scored another touchdown later. And that's the thing.
If you if you're going to need two scores, you might as well know it as soon as possible. You might as well know it as soon as possible that you're going to need to score twice. So yes, Mike McCarthy, you were right about that. But I feel like I'm backed into a corner here defending this guy. I can't believe the Cowboys went from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy. I mean, isn't the Dallas Cowboys the most prestigious, you could argue the most prestigious coaching job in all of American sports? And they go from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy? I mean, they can't do better than this.
Well,
I don't know
but Murray, he spent a full year learning analytics. What do you mean? Like, he spent the full year doing
great.
That.
Oh, all you got to do is hire some kid to just stand next to you and tell you what to do. Get some 14-year-old kid that plays Madden all day and just have him stand next to you and say, no, go for it here, do this, do that. That's all you got to do. Whole year of learning it.
I kind of like Dallas.
Yeah, now we did say, I will say this, all seriousness, we saw a group that we respect. They laid 3.5 early in the week. That lines up to 5. We'll see here. I don't know what the books are going to need here. I think you're going to get a lot of two-way right on this game. There will definitely be some Seattle money line parlays, but I think a lot of people will talk themselves into Dallas plus 5, and I can see why. Keep an eye on the Dallas injury report. They had a lot of guys out last week against Atlanta. I think that's a big reason why that line crashed against the Falcons.
High total of 56 here. Wow. Okay, Sunday night, I bet you're going to have a lot of money and a lot of tickets on Green Bay as the Saints are 3-point home favorites.
Yeah, Green Bay is going to be the big public dog this week for sure. I mean, right now it's about 5-1 on the Packers. Packers are 2-0. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about Buffalo, easy early schedule. Green Bay, I mean, we don't know how good those teams that they played are. They beat the Vikings. They beat the Lions. How good are the Packers really? I mean, we'll find out a lot about them on Sunday night. It looks like the books are actually going to need the favorite here. I think Green Bay is going to be the big public dog this week, and it's a high profile game where there'll be a lot of money in the pool. It's looking like we'll need the Saints on Sunday Night Football.
I think you might get there. I think this could be a good spot. Saints respond. We'll see about Michael Thomas. He did not go on the injury report, so that means he's not definitely out three games. We'll see if he returns in time for that one. And then the big one, the Monday Night Football game. And this went from 2.5 through the key number of 3 to 3.5. I get it. I get the line move from 2.5 to 3. I do, because I liked Baltimore, and I understand their defense is far superior to the Chiefs' D. But 3.5 is a lot for Mahomes.
You know, we opened this game 3 on Sunday night, and we saw money come in on Baltimore right away. We're at 3.5 right now in Baltimore. Saw a sharp group go over 51.5 earlier in the week. Now, that number's gone. We're at 54 right now. I'm just reporting that. I'm not saying you should bet over 54 because these guys went over 51.5, but that bet did take place. We like Baltimore in this game, honestly, Doug. I mean, we think Baltimore is the best team in the NFL, and we think they're going to show it on Monday night. That's the play we gave Brent Musburger. We gave him Baltimore -3.5. Like I said earlier, we like the Patriots just as much, but we didn't want to use that game because they were playing the Raiders. But so the official play we gave to Brent was Ravens -3.5. And, you know, I do that show every Wednesday at 3:00 on VSiN. And I got invited to the casino P&L next Wednesday at 3:00, which gets me out of facing Musburger if that Ravens pick loses. I accepted that meeting invite faster than any meeting in request I've ever gotten in my entire career. I couldn't wait to accept that meeting invite so I don't have to face Brent next Wednesday if Kansas City covers the spread. 0-3 would be an embarrassment.
So of all the point spreads out there, you like Baltimore 3.5 with the hook, huh?
It's the play. I mean, it's a tough one. Kansas City's a great team. Patrick Mahomes is the best player in the league, in my opinion. But I think Baltimore was clearly the best team in the NFL last year. I think they're clearly the best team in the NFL this year. Does that mean they'll win the Super Bowl? No, not necessarily. But, yes, we do like Baltimore here on Monday night. Going to be a great game. These are the two best teams in the league by far. Yeah, this is definitely the game of the year, NFL regular season for sure. It's awesome.
All right, we talked about it. Let's get to the bonanza.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, Murray, strong out of the gates. Your guy is on a mission this year. The dime teaser covers with ease. San Francisco and Baltimore didn't even need the teaser. Both teams cover the outright. And your Eagles did not get there.
No, you're already leaving me in your dust. You know, it's like it's week 3, and I'm already just looking up at you in the standings. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. You're definitely in the tee box here for sure. So I'll play off of what you're doing.
So I would say nothing compares to the pressure Musburger puts on you, but. Where do we stand in terms of the pressure of the bonanza?
You want to do well. I mean, anytime you put yourself out there, you want to make sure you do well. Musburger did say this, that he said he was going to play the Eagles anyway. But I kind of got the feeling he just said that because he felt sorry for me. Like, I don't know. I don't know if he was telling me the truth on that. But he did say he was planning to play Philadelphia against the Rams anyway. So I think he's just taking pity on me.
Has he been one to fib like that and be such a softie?
No, not really. Actually, no. In fact, he's gone the opposite way and kind of been hard on me when I've lost. So maybe I'm just overthinking that whole thing.
Yeah, maybe. all right. So, we talked about bankroll management. The whole reason we're doing the baby bankroll bonanza is that you shouldn't, as much as I respect the Superbook and the contest and its place in gambling history, I think it's not always the best measure. I mean, I think having to pick 5 games this week is a lot tougher than having to pick 5 games last week and all that, blah, blah, blah. Right. So I'm going to go one small bet because I do like the Patriots, and I'm going to go small. I'm going to do like $300 just to have a little nibble.
I don't like this. I don't like that you're bringing in the oars in week 3 here. I mean, you know, we've got gifts on the line for my niece, and you're already tucking it in, huh? It's week 3. We got a long way to go here.
I'm basically getting plus 110 on all the losers I would have had.
Okay. Well, I like the Patriots too. We talked about that at the start of the show. I'll go Patriots. I'll lay six because I think other than us and the South Point, everybody in the city has six right now, if I'm looking at that correctly. So I'll go six, Patriots minus six for 1,100 to win 1,000 in the bank roll. And I'll do the same thing on Baltimore. I'll put my money where my mouth is. We gave it to Brent. We got to give it to ourselves. Ravens minus 3.5 for the same 1,100 to win 1,000. You know, maybe I'm sabotaging myself intentionally, so I have to buy more stuff for my niece. Think
there
about
you go.
That. That's a possible.
There you go.
Think about that. Possible.
I will say this. I could have ended the bonanza early. I hypothetically, let's just say I bet Sunday night minus 3.5 or 4 on the Seahawks and played back 7.5 in the fourth quarter live, or hypothetically, let's say
that'd
that
be
happened.
Nice. Hypothetically, it would have been a nice hypothetically
middle.
That sounds
it would have been a night. It would have been a really nice Sunday night middle. And you and
I'm
I
sure it would have been.
We did see each other Monday. We caught up after the game. It was a fun celebratory night. So things are.
We might have to do something. We might have to do something this Monday night because this is the best game of the year, and it's going to be an awesome Monday night football game. So maybe we'll get together somewhere in this fair city and check it out.
All right, sounds good, my friend. Let's just ease into it. I'm just urging all of our listeners that could be a tough week, could be a wonky week. Don't spend all that money we beat up the books with last week.
I disagree with that. Spend it all. Give it right back to us. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, bud. Take care.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies. Stop. Hammer time.
Time now to break down the UFC. UFC 253 heading to Fight Island for a stretch of 5 cards. Let's welcome in the gentlemen. Matt and Lou are here. And guys, it was really interesting, I thought, just to have you guys on opposite sides a week ago. I thought it was a good dialogue. I thought it was good to break up sort of the monotony of being on the same page. And, you know, we had some stumbles or a couple fights didn't go each of your ways, which is fine. But we got there in the main event, Lou. The inside the distance paid actually at some places plus 350 with Covington. So well done on that front. And is that kind of how you expected it, late stoppage?
I thought that Covington would be able to wear on him, and somewhere in 4 or 5, I thought it was very likely. It was getting late. I was beginning to sweat because it wasn't a great early start for me with the other fighters. And I honestly would have told you that it would have been a submission would be how Covington won. As it was a little fluky, but I'll take the win and move ahead.
Good stuff. And Matthew, I know there was, we were all a little bit all over the place with some stuff. What surprised you the most?
Well, I'll tell you that the amount of lack of officiating, even following the rules. So in my world, U.S. Integrity, you know, we deal with regulators and the sports books. And one of those fights, the Jessica Rose Clark fight, actually caused a lot of controversy in my world. Where, you know, there is strict rules that once, you know, a fight's gone to replay or replay has been involved in a fight, the fight cannot be restarted. It affected the over on that Jessica Rose Clark fight, and a lot of sports books just gave refunds or paid out, even some paid out both sides of that. But I always hate to see the sports books and the regulators put in that tough spot because a referee didn't follow the rules of the State Athletic Commission.
Okay, so that's a place that hits home to you, and you wanted to bring that up. Let's turn the page. Obviously, an exciting card. We got to remember the Fight Island has a more conventional-sized octagon as opposed to the smaller one at the Apex. Well, let's start with the main event. Adesanya and Costa, just very rare that we get, and, undefeated squaring off in a title fight. So this is the middleweight title. Adesanya, the whole current champ, and he's about a minus -170. It was a minus -130, and I know, Lou, you were big on this at -130, but even at the new price, do you still see value at Adesanya?
Well, yes, and I have to because that's what's available to everybody today. But I will tell you that I think it possible if I were in their position and didn't get the 135 or better, I would be patient right now. I think there could be, and I'd love Matthew's opinion on this when we get to him, is I think there could be some late Costa action. He looks the part. The public can often judge the book by the cover. I'm of the opinion that Costa's cover looks great. I'm just not sure if there's much to read in between.
You know what's interesting here is speed kills, whether it's boxing or MMA, and what the constant narrative that's starting to be dictated in this fight is that Israel Adesanya, his speed is going to be so devastating for Costa, that and that Costa is a tailor-made opponent for Israel Adesanya coming forward. I love the over 2.5 rounds in this fight. I think that the narrative has been that these two guys are immense knockout artists. Look, Israel Adesanya is 8-0 in the UFC, but five of those eight wins are by decision. This is a guy who came in as, you know, winning every single fight by knockout, but five of his eight wins in the UFC are by decision. Three of his four last wins are by decision. So as the competition level in the UFC has gotten better, he's tended to go the distance. The one exception was a Robert Whittaker fight, and Whittaker seemed primed to be taken out. He seemed like a burnt-out champion. Adesanya caught him perfectly and stopped him. But besides that, in his last four fights, he has been a decision machine. And on the other side, even if there's massive speed and precision advantages for Israel Adesanya, Costa's chin has stood the test of time. He got hit flush a lot of times in the Uriah Hall fight. He got hit flush by Yoel Romero. This guy's chin has held up. And thank goodness it's held up, because his defense isn't the best. He comes forward, throws vicious combinations, and that's what he's going to do here. And that chin's going to have to hold up again. And I think at least for a while it will hold up. Look, biggest fight of the career for both of these guys. This is a huge monster pay-per-view. Undefeated champion versus undefeated challenger. And the UFC might have done one of their best promoting jobs ever with this fight. People are really hyped up. A lot of times in a big fight, fighters tend to start slowly anyway. But if you ignore the narrative, stop watching the UFC promotional videos, which are awesome, by the way, for this fight. Stop watching those to make your decision and actually look at the stats. The stats tell you that this fight's probably going to go at least into round 3, 4, 5. And it actually has almost a 50% chance of being a decision over 2.5 for minus 120, one of my favorite pieces of the card.
Lou, do you see it that way as well?
In a way. I believe that Adesanya's speed and movement is going to give Costa tremendous trouble, especially in the 30-foot cage. If this fight was held a week ago in Vegas, I make the line close to a pick'em, because Adesanya is going to have to rely on it. This is a bullfight. Adesanya's waving the red cape, and the bull's going to be coming, charging, trying to take him down. In each of Costa's fights, yeah, he has a good chin, but he has 13 professional fights. He's only fought twice since 2018. The only real competitor he fought was Romero, and Romero was able to put him on his pants once or twice. And I'm willing to give Costa explosion. I'm willing to give him youth. But Adesanya not only has a different kind of a record, which is 19-0 in the UFC, he comes from a kickboxing background where he was 75-5. So in professional fights and in professional mainstream media pressure and everything that it takes, he's seen every size and shape, and Costa's going to come at him like a bull. The key to this fight to me will be, can Adesanya stay on his feet? I believe he does. And besides taking Adesanya, and I don't like to lay the 170, I'm using him in a parlay, 170 as part one, the second leg to remain open. I'll use it later. But my bet in this fight is inside the distance, Adesanya, plus 135. I believe quite confidently that after the second or third round, when Costa's starch begins to wane, that he's going to walk right into one of Adesanya's shin bones, and Adesanya is going to put this man out. Costa does not belong in the octagon with him pedigree-wise. against Yoel Romero in round one, Costa landed, excuse me, Costa's defense against Romero in round one of their fight, Romero landed 32 significant strikes. Against Costa in the second round of that Romero fight, Romero landed 40, and he landed 53 in the third. That's a terrible prescription for Costa to go the full five. And for that reason, I'm going to take Adesanya inside the distance at that nice plus 135 price.
And that's five rounds, though. I mean, that's the difference is both of these could hit relatively easily because it's a main event and a title
Absolutely.
Fight. We're going five rounds. And I think we should mention it's part of the equation, obviously. There's an 8-inch reach advantage, too, for Adesanya. I mean, that's significant, especially for guys who's got that striking ability.
Provided he keeps it on the feet. I mean, Costa's right. a black belt in BJJ, and surely whether it takes him getting stung to take this fight on the ground, part of his plan will be to rush in to try and tackle Adesanya and get him on the mat.
And Matthew, is that we talk about paths to victory. Is that Costa's really only path to victory?
No, I don't think it's his only path to victory. I also think he can land a big punch. He throws huge shots, and these are big guys. So he has multiple paths to victory here. I do agree with Lou that I think that Adesanya speed advantage and technical striking capabilities is going to cause Costa problems if they just stand there on their feet the whole fight. But I think Adesanya understands, as we saw with the Melvin Vettori fight, where he almost lost to Melvin Vettori. He doesn't want to get taken down. And Costa's, he's one of those guys, huge, muscly guys, tend to gas and slow down. So Adesanya is going to want to take him into deep water anyway. I could see a situation where that 30-foot ring helps me here with the over, as Adesanya uses that reach, uses that footwork to stay away from Costa, make sure he doesn't get taken down early, and then as Costa starts to slow down later in the fight, really start to explode with his striking. But I think early on, Adesanya is going to be content to stay away from him, avoid the takedown, avoid the big shot, and counterpunch when he can.
That's fair. Yeah, no, I like the sound of that. All right, let's go to the next card. Dominic Reyes against Błachowicz. Now, I'm interested in this fight for a variety of reasons. I've heard Reyes, his name has been around, but I've just never been overwhelmed by him. But he's a minus 260 favorite. Am I crazy for just not seeing Lou, you like dogs. Am I crazy for not seeing why he's priced so high?
Well, he's priced high for a couple of reasons. Number one is Jones had his way with Błachowicz, and Dominic Reyes in his last fight arguably beat him, depending on
right.
how you saw that fight. Reyes is going to be 2 inches taller, 7 years younger, and a left-hander. So while Reyes won't have a reach advantage on Błachowicz, he'll have leverage with his size. He's training at team elevation with Blades. He's had a full 5-week camp. And when I look at Błachowicz's lineup, he beat Corey Anderson, who's an arguably top 12 light heavyweight in the division, who's no longer in the UFC, but his fights before then, Jacare Souza, who's 41, and Rockhold, who's retired. So I think this is Błachowicz's best chance, but I don't think he has enough. I just think Dom Reyes is a legitimate 220 or 240 favorite, and I don't have much opinion as far as a bet on the fight.
You know what's interesting in this fight? So one of my really close friends, I used to host a podcast with him. We came to my son's birthday at a bowling alley and hung out with all the kids. Really super guy, UFC Hall of Famer Stefan Bonner, lives here in Las Vegas, has a wonderful family. He's actually going to be in the corner of Diego Sanchez. And I told Stefan, I said, hey, when you're over there, tell Jan Błachowicz that he should change his nickname to the Bankroll Buster. 9 of the last 11 fights for Błachowicz, he's been an underdog. And in his last 7 fights as an underdog, he's 6-1. He's 6-1. His last 7 fights as an underdog. You talk about a guy who gets zero respect from the odds makers. If you had bet against Jan Błachowicz his last 7 fights, your bankroll is busted because you laid minus money 7 straight times and lost 6 of those. All this guy does is win as a dog, win as a dog. And looking back, it's hard to imagine why he was such a big dog in some of those fights. Why was he a 2.5-to-1 dog, Luke Rockhold? That seems silly now, but at the time, obviously, it made perfect sense. There wasn't an overwhelming amount of money on Błachowicz, who dusted Rockhold. He was a big dog to Corey Anderson, dusted him. This is a guy who just doesn't get any respect in the betting market. And if you break down the fight, you can make a lot of advantages for Dominic Reyes here. 7 years younger, and the more experienced, more technical striker, underrated defensive wrestling game. Part of Błachowicz's best game is his offensive wrestling and submission game. Dominic Reyes' defensive wrestling is really good. Błachowicz has been knocked out a couple of times in the past where Dominic Reyes has never been knocked out. But at the end of the day, what I've learned, and I am not getting in front of this freight train, is betting against Jan Błachowicz busts your bankroll. He has just been so good in the underdog role, and it's underdog role he's in all the time, basically. I mean, when have we seen a guy in a title fight who 9 of his last 11 fights has been an underdog? You never see that. It's just amazing.
So would you like the dog here?
No, I'm not betting the dog because I actually absolutely love Dominic Reyes. He's the guy I always hoped to be champion. This, to me, is grab some popcorn and watch this one. But if I do end up sprinkling anything on the fight, as this line continues to grow, it has to be on Jan Błachowicz because history tells us he excels in this situation.
And what would be his path to victory?
Knock him out. You know, one of the greatest things that happened to Jan Błachowicz is he started getting a little older. So after a couple losses a few years ago, he admittedly said, you know, I'm fatiguing late in fights because I go to my go-to right away, which is my wrestling. But as we know with bigger guys, you know, when you weigh in at 205, what do you weigh the night of the fight? 220, 225? Mm-hmm. These are big guys wrestling in there. And he said it was gassing him out and affecting his performances. And as he got older, he didn't want to be spending all the time and energy wrestling. So he started working on his striking, and the results have been great. He dusted Corey Anderson. He absolutely dusted Luke Rockhold. And what we started to see is his striking game's really good, especially his power counter striking game. So look, on the ground, Jan Błachowicz is the better fighter. His ground game is really, really good. He has 9 wins by submission as a big guy. You tend to see a lot less submission wins by big guys. Jan Błachowicz is an ace on the ground. And on feet, he certainly could catch Dominic Reyes with one big shot. So, again, he has multiple paths to victory here.
Okay. I like it. I mean, look, it's, you know, so I guess the price is right, so to speak, but you see value in the dog there. Let's go to the next fight with Cara France and Roy Val. Another similar price fight at -230. Lou, you typically like dogs, so I like to start with you when there is a dog. What do you see here?
I actually don't have a strong opinion on this one. What I like about Roy Val is that he recently upgraded camps, quit his job, and works at mixed martial arts full-time. He's the 4 inches the longer man, a left-hander. He's scrappy and tall, and I believe he'll have a ground advantage. If he can get this to the ground, I think he has a really good chance. However, France comes from City Kickboxing, and there's going to be a lot of Zealand and Aussie fighters. That's the same camp as Adesanya, France comes from. Solid kickboxer, great cardio, total advantage in the stand-up, I believe, despite giving up some reach and some size to the other kid. Overall, I would lean to Roy Val here because I like his price, but I'm afraid of France and I respect him, so no real strong position on this fight.
Yeah, I really like Brandon Roy Val in this spot, and this is one of my favorite underdogs of the fight. What I think with Cara France, and I tend to like guys, you know, especially the City Kickboxing guys, what a huge gym that is. And when they tend to have cards where they get 6, 7, 8 guys ready for one fight, they tend to do really well. In this case, I think Cara France is the one City Kickboxing guy that I'm okay betting against. When we look at young fighters, we always talk about their potential and where they could be and, you know, can they make the big jump? I think we've seen the best of Kai Cara France. I just think He is what he is. And that decision win over Mark De La Rosa, which everyone at the time thought was a great win, that certainly hasn't aged well. And I just think his grinding striking game is what it is, and that he's peaked and he's not going to get any better. On the other part of it, Brandon Royval, who's from Inglewood, California, he looks and reminds me of Nate Diaz in almost every single way. He's tall, lanky, has these long, skinny arms. You take him for granted as, well, that guy doesn't look really muscular. And he even has that, like, Nate Diaz walk. I guess it's the guys from Northern California there that tend to have a little bit of that strut. But he has that Nate Diaz effect. He submitted Tim Elliott, which is no small feat in his UFC debut. He's won 6 of his last 7 with the only loss to Casey Kenney. Lou already alluded to the fact that he's upgraded his gym, now training at Factory X with the likes of Anthony Lionheart Smith and so many talented people up there. I think this is a guy who's just starting to put it all together. And remember Nate Diaz early in his career. They said, oh, Nate Diaz is kind of a one-trick pony. He has these amazing submissions, but with those skinny arms, could he really outstrike anybody? And they put him in there with Donald Cowboy Cerrone, and Nate Diaz won a kickboxing match, basically, against Cowboy Cerrone. I think Brandon Royval striking here is also underrated just because of his physique and lack of one-punch power. But this kid has, like, Nate Diaz-like written all over it to me, and I think he's going to spring the big upset here against the Kai Car of France, who's probably already hit his peak in MMA.
Interesting. Okay, so you have a play on the dog there. You like it? I like it, too, in terms of just your passion for that one. So neither of you guys have anything on the Eubanks-Vera fight, I should say, but wrapping up the main card, I believe, Lou, you said you have a play here.
Yes, this first fight on the main card, Canadian Hakeem Dawodo, I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly, against Russian Tahugov. Really fascinating featherweight fight here. These guys physically are about the same size, although Dawodo, who really is a Muay Thai striker, so he has to excel by using athleticism and striking. He wants nothing to do with the ground, and he's built for striking because he's going to have a 2-inch leg reach advantage and a 5-inch arm reach advantage. So Dawodo, little bit of a slow starter, is going to need to address his slow starts, use his speed and his reach, keep it standing, and try and strike with Tahugov. Tahugov, the Russian, these guys are unbelievable grapplers, sambo artists, and wrestlers. Tahugov, a master of sport and hand-to-hand combat as well, sambo, is a fighter that in the UFC has never shown his wrestling. All he has done is stand and bang. He's going to start out standing and banging with this Canadian kid, and he's going to realize real quickly that he's giving up reach and speed to a kid that's much more fluid on the feet. And for that reason, I believe that's when we're going to see Tahugov kick into the sambo, and provided that he can withstand a pretty ferocious first 5 minutes from the fresh striking Canadian, I think come round 2 and 3, Tahugov's going to grasp hold of him, take him to the ground and rub him out. And that fight is really lined really close to a pick'em right now. I like the Russian in this fight.
Okay, so you think eventually he'll be able to adjust to the flavor of the fight and go to the ground. What about you, Matthew?
Well, I hate to do it again because I think we had one last week, but I'm on the other side here, and it took me a little while to get there. At first I was a little bit torn on this fight, but again, I went back and watched Dawodo a bunch of times, and what I thought about him was, why does this guy like Jan Błachowicz continually to be underrated? Look at the strength of schedule. Before, basically all his fights were either in UFC or WSOF, World Series of Fighting, which is another top-tier organization. Look, in WSOF, this is a guy who had a draw and a KO win over Murat Magomedov, which, is, again, that's really impressive that so early in his career he was able to fight for a draw with Magomedov, come back and knock him out in the rematch. And then this is a guy who's beat Kyle Bochniak, a tough guy. Julio Arce, another tough guy. He beat Steven Seiler in WSOF. Dewadu's one of those guys where he doesn't always look amazing. But the one thing I 100% agreed with Lou about in this fight is Takugov is going to start this thing out banging on the feet. That's just how he ends up fighting. Almost all his fights go that way. And there's a real chance that Dewadu could not only win the first round, but do some real damage in this fight. It's harder to get takedowns if you're tired. It's harder to get takedowns when you're getting beat up. And it's hard to win a fight sometimes when you give away one third of the rounds in a three round fight. For that reason, and the fact that you can get plus money now, plus 05 or even, I think Dewadu is the lean for me.
Okay, interesting. And would you take a first round like win?
Yeah, I think it's possible.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And then you get a nice payout in some of those. Okay. And let's go to the prelims card. You guys just have a couple plays here or even a lean. I'll start with you, Matthew, in the Knight-Kimura fight. Kimura's about a minus -160 here, and you have a play.
Yeah, I got two totals on the prelims. This is the first one. Aleska Kimura versus William Knight here. These are a couple of big, strong, devastating strikers at 205 pounds. You know, Kimura 6-0 with five knockouts. Those five knockouts, granted, most of them coming on the regional scene. But this is a guy who trains in Independence, Ohio with Cody Garbrandt, Matt Brown, Stipe Miocic. He trains with some really good guys here. And on the other side, William Knight is a knockout machine. 8-1, eight knockouts. Fought 3 weeks ago on Dana White Contender Series and won by first knockout. And the only loss of his career, coincidentally, was to Tafon Inchukwi. And Inchukwi just won 2 weeks ago on Dana White Contender Series via knockout and earned himself a contract into the UFC. So while that one regional loss may have looked, you know, suspect before, Inchukwi is one of those guys everybody's going to know about real soon because he is a devastating knockout fighter. And it just goes to the style of Knight, who goes in there with one purpose and one purpose alone, to take his opponent's head off. That's going to be the case for both guys. And Kimura, I actually think there's some value on Knight as well as an underdog here, as Kimura probably hasn't fought the toughest guys on the regional circuit, and the Justin Ledet UFC debut win wasn't the most impressive of performances, but guys tend to have jitters in their UFC debut. I think this one's going to be a shootout. I don't think they make it 7.5 minutes in. We get plus money on that. I got under 1.5 rounds, plus 115. And my other total that I played on the prelims was Jake Matthews, Diego Sanchez, under 2.5 rounds, minus 180. The handicap here is really simple. Jake Matthews is a minus 700 favorite. And I went back and looked at favorites in the UFC that are minus 600 or greater. And in over 90% of those fights, the total on that fight was either 1.5 rounds or 2.5 rounds with a huge under. And this, it's the most correlated big favorite that I have seen in, I think, 4 years, where we have a favorite of minus 750, yet a round prop of 2.5 rounds over minus 170. Basically, the odds makers are saying it is a 100% guarantee here, or whatever, a 90% guarantee that Jake Matthews wins a decision here. Well, why do you have such a big favorite and only one way to win the fight? It's nonsensical. It almost doesn't make sense to have somebody of that big a favorite not expect them to have a dominating performance. And on the other side, you have a 38-year-old Diego Sanchez who just a couple of fights ago was trying to fight at 145. Literally, his weight has fluctuated all over the place. That's not helpful in a fight as you get older. The idea that you're going to fight at 145, then let me try 170 because nothing's working. He got a win over Michael Pereira in his last fight by disqualification in a fight where Pereira was going to knock him out, ended up hitting him with an illegal knee, which stopped the fight and causing a DQ to Pereira, who fights a little crazy. If you believe that Jake Matthews is a warranted and justified minus 750 favorite over the 38-year-old Diego Sanchez, then I think you also have to like under 2.5 rounds plus 160.
In terms of the correlation of the under and all that, aren't a lot of the women's fights have huge lines and then also the over 2.5? I know those are different kind of knockout power, but still, isn't that sometimes what we see?
But that is true, but when we've seen those, like Mackenzie Dern when she got upset and stuff, a lot of times you still see lower totals on those. The idea that the over is minus 180, a 2.5, so basically going the distance here, and you have a minus 750 favorite is almost unprecedented.
Yeah, and Lou, do you have a comment on that?
No, you know, mostly the girls go over because they're in 30-foot cages and they weigh 115. I mean, it's like two flies in a mason jar. This particular fight, I think that, to me, the over being priced as it is more a reflection of Jake Matthews being a wrestler and not a very good striker than it is anything else. And I happen to think that he's way overinflated. I don't think he should be 700. I think at plus 450, you put a lunch money bet on Diego Sanchez, even though, you know, he's way older. He always comes to fight. And if anything, Matthews, you know, he can get bullied by strikers a little bit. So I fully expect Matthews to win. But the only way I would bet this is put a little bit of money on the dog and hope.
Take a flyer on that one. Okay, before we wrap things up, you have a lean here on the prelim card.
Just real quickly, we've got a 40-year-old Spanish fighter who's training in Florida, coming in for his second UFC fighter at heavyweight. He's coming in to fight a guy named Jeff Hughes, who came up to the UFC through the Dana White Contender Series. And in fact, up until three fights ago, he had an 11-1 record in professional fights. He gets to the UFC, he takes a rematch against a guy he beat a few fights earlier and got beat. Then he gets a no contest, and then he takes another loss against a large Brazilian. This Jeff Hughes trains with Miocic. He's 0-3 in the UFC. He's fighting for his job, and I love a dog backed into a corner, and Hughes is a dog backed into a corner. Espino, the older man, has a huge reach advantage, going to be a little bit larger, but I'm going to judge this fight by heart, and I think Hughes plus 250 is worth a look, and I'll have a final determination on that fight Saturday morning once I get to see weigh-ins, watch them look at each other in the stare downs, etc.
Look, I actually agree with Lou here a lot. If not for Roy Vell, this would have been one of my favorite underdogs on the card. Espino, 39 years old, hasn't fought since November 30th, 2018. That's a long time. Look, I think built into the price here is the fact that Juan Francisco Espino is one of the greatest competition grapplers ever. We're talking about the 2011 gold medal winner at the World Grappling Championships in Belgrade, the European Grappling Championship. The grappling accolades for Espino are, they could fill up our whole offices here. He has so accomplished, but he's 39 years old, almost on a 2-year layoff, pretty one-dimensional. His striking is, let's call it average at best, and that's probably giving him a lot of credit. And Hughes, as we saw in the Josh Appelt fight, has the ability to come in there and bang guys out. And at 39 years old, if Espino can't get the fight to the ground early, that's going to be exhausting trying to wrestle 250-pound guys. I think there's a possibility if Espino doesn't get a submission stoppage in round one, he's likely to gas, and suddenly you're going to see a really live dog in Jeff Hughes. I think that's a really smart play by Lou.
How do you feel about the under then? Because Espino could end it with grappling, and then if he tires out, Hughes can one punch, so to speak.
Agreed. My only fear there is that Hughes hangs on for a round, and
right.
then the over under is 1.5 here. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was asking. It's like right there. But maybe, I mean, that's also like if you're going to do Hughes, might as well do Hughes inside the distance.
Yes, agreed.
And take a flyer even more so. Maybe just breakfast money. You don't need lunch money for that.
Well, I've got an interesting stat for us on that, gentlemen, and that is in 30-foot cages, okay, when the over-under is 1.5, the over is 53.1%, and that's in heavyweights in UFC history. So I wouldn't be so quick to jump the under here, especially since it's to me, it's going to take Hughes to get to the second round to begin to show what he's got. And Espino, big, huge, 250-pound guy, could take a while to chop down.
That's a good point. That's a good point. All right, fellas, look, always great having you on. We start a stretch of five straight cards at UFC Fight Island. Let's start out on the right foot here.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Best of luck, everybody. Thanks.
Good luck to everyone, and thank you.
Okay, that's going to do it for this lengthy podcast. We had some beefy content this week, but hopefully it satisfies you over the next few days, and it's certainly worth a listen. You can even go back. The shelf life is there, especially for like the SEC preview, things like that. So I hope you all enjoyed that. We're going to look to do some baseball next week and obviously get back into the swing of things with college and NFL. So thanks to Matthew and Lou. Thanks to John Murray. And thanks to Christina, always the reliable producer, making it all work and sing on our end. So good luck to everyone this weekend.